You're listening to China Manufacturing Decoded from the Sophie's Group. A mid-air accident is an air traveler's worst nightmare. And can you imagine the terror the Alaska Airlines passengers must have felt on that recent 737 MAX flight where a door plug blew out, leaving a door-shaped hole in the fuselage at however many thousands of feet? Well, that was seriously embarrassing for Boeing. And in this episode today, we're going to be looking at Boeing's manufacturing practices. And we're going to be asking the question, are they doing some things or not doing things which are increasing the risks of problems in their airplanes? And we'll also be looking at what good manufacturers do in order to reduce risks, which of course is very often the name of the game in manufacturing, in order to get a product to market that reaches everybody's expectations. Well, it's time to let Renault and Paul Adams, one of our senior engineers, take it away on today's episode, where they will get into this.
Hi everybody. This is Renaud Anjoran here on China Manufacturing Decoded, and today I'm recording this episode with Paul Adams, one of our senior engineers, who is here with me today. He's been on the podcast a few times before. Hi, Paul. How are you doing?
Good morning, Renaud. Yes, thanks for inviting me along. I think we've got an interesting subject to talk about, but I'll let you introduce that in a minute. But so, yeah, glad to be here again.
Yeah, so we're going to cover again a hot topic about Boeing, because as the investigators from the NTSB and probably the FAA are involved in the USA, more and more information is coming out in the news. And we were reading a Wall Street Journal article that cast a light on a bad manufacturing habit. They haven't made the effort to get rid of over the years, and finally it seems like they're trying to be serious and tackle that problem. That's what they call traveled work. We'll link to the article in the show notes, but basically what is that bad manufacturing habit is to see some issues but not fix them right away, and plan to fix them later in the process, and then sometimes they forget it, right? So first, just a little bit of context. We covered, it was like in a short bonus episode with Andrew a few weeks ago. We covered this a bit. So Boeing has a serious culture issue, okay, with finance-driven leadership, let's say. And some very numerical objectives that are very, very focused on the output. Let's get the planes out the door quick, and let's keep costs in check. And, well, of course, they talk big about quality and safety, but on the shop floor, people report that, well, you know, it doesn't look like it's the number one priority. The number one priority for years now, for maybe a couple of decades actually, has been getting the planes out the door as fast as possible. Okay. And this comes back to sort of the Jack Welch approach to business. Let's go fast and so on. And one of the ex-GE guys became the CEO of Boeing and changed the whole culture. And they moved the headquarters away from Seattle because it's too close to the manufacturing and engineering folks. Okay, so big culture issue. So in this case, okay, just so I finish my introduction and we can go deeper into what is the issue with that bad manufacturing habit and what should manufacturers do. What happened here is that, so Boeing has a big subcontractor called Spirit AeroSystems that makes the fuselage. So it is probably the biggest part of the plane. And that company seems to have some very serious issues. Okay, so what happens, it seems, again, by reading that article and some other articles on the topic, is that Boeing has known for years that that subcontractor doesn't do a great job. But they just kept receiving the fuselage and putting them on the assembly line and go, go, go until the full plane is assembled and ready to deliver, right? And in the case of the door plug that blew out on the Alaska Airlines flight, some of the bolts were missing or were not fixed properly. Okay, and actually workers on the line saw it at Boeing, but it was already on the line. The plane, they just don't stop the line. They don't want to stop the line, so they say, well, it's going to be fixed later. And then guess what happened? It did not get fixed in the end. Okay, maybe they forgot it. Maybe they said, well, we just don't have time to do that today. Whatever. Maybe there were some more serious issues that they had to attend to first, and they just didn't have the time to do this one. Who knows? And then in the end, there's no documentation even to show that anything was done, because nothing was done at Boeing anyway. But still, they say that it did get noticed. Okay, so that's the high level broad brush painting of the situation. Now, why is that a problem? What do good factories do? The main point is to get things right the first time, right?
Well, yeah, absolutely. You know, and a lot of this comes down to sort of getting the right processes in place. It is training people the correct way. A lot of that is down to empowering the workers to actually take ownership and responsibility, not only for their own work, but for upstream work as well. One of the sort of best practices we have witnessed and seen and we have here is if we've got a component coming down the line or it's a sub-assembly and that has a specific task or that person has a specific task, and if it's a safety critical component, the person next in line has the responsibility for checking that work. Yeah, so it's cross-checking all of the time. This is very, very simple, but it's best practices. None of this is introduced into Boeing. None of this is enforced into the workers' mentality or the training or anything like that. And this is just one simple example. But risk analysis, again, is another big thing we could touch on and talk for hours on, but that's for another topic. A lot of this, I think, reading through that article, Renaud, I get the impression that the workers looked at that, they acknowledged that they saw the problem straight away, but they'd done nothing about it. And the management pushed the line to move that aircraft down the production line as quickly as possible and out the door. And every time that went past somebody's eyes, I think they had the mentality, it's not my responsibility, so therefore I'm not going to touch it. That's totally the opposite to what a good factory would do.
Right, right, right. And the key metric for that would be first pass yield, right? Typically. So within, let's say at least within your four walls, what you want to do is you look at your processes, you look at, okay, we have like sub-assemblies, components, etc., coming here. And at the end, maybe it's a finished product. All along the line, what is the capability? What is the percentage of the finished products that come out of the line good the first time? So nowhere along the process steps have they been put aside, reworked, everything's been good. And if it's a very complex type of manufacturing and sometimes with some relatively immature processes, you might have a relatively low yield, maybe sometimes 70%, 80%, sometimes lower. I mean, semiconductors typically for the new generation, it starts really low actually. And then it kind of gets higher and higher. And then when it starts to be in the 80s, 90s, and so on. Oh, okay, it's the new generation. So we start over again, right? But in mature productions of simple products, it should start already in the 90s if you do your NPI process correctly. Okay, not going to go into that, but we covered the NPI process in some other podcasts, some earlier episodes. So, as I mentioned, it's within your four walls. But here, the problem with Boeing is that they have a lot of defective components and sub-assemblies, like the fuselage, that arrives in their factory, right? So, what would happen in a properly managed supply chain? Would you just accept?
No, of course not. Well, you shouldn't. Clearly, some people do, and some companies do. There's evidence of that. But in general, yeah. So, looking at the best practices and what your supply chain is all about, it's really about really having a good relationship with your upstream supply chain, and this goes from raw materials to nuts and screws and bolts to the very, very basic things, right up to the more complex components. You need to have that really good relationship with them and understand their processes. Now, one of the things that you can do, and a lot of the factories out there and companies do this, and best practice is to analyze your upstream supply chain with respect to what their processes are, what their quality systems are, what they have in place. If they do not have what you think as a customer, your requirements, you can actually sit down with them and go through some additional training. You can invest time in your supply chain in order to improve not only the relationship, but more importantly, the quality of products coming out of each of your suppliers to ensure that incoming goods are correct first time. Now, that doesn't mean to say that you can ignore incoming inspection. That is a critical component and critical area for every single company, and you should have that in place. But if you invest time, effort, and potentially some money investing in training your upstream suppliers to improve their processes, then you can bet your bottom dollar that your incoming goods are going to be better. The yield is going to be a lot better than if you do not spend any time with your upstream suppliers. Mm-hmm. And that's for sure.
Right. And here, what I'm guessing was happening with that Spirit AeroSystem subcontractor is that when there were issues and they had to be reworked in the Boeing plant, certainly Boeing re-invoiced the supplier for that. And, managers were like, whatever, in terms of cost, we re-invoice it to them. If we lose some time on our assembly line because there's something really crazy, like really have to fix it there. Okay, we're going to probably also re-invoice. Hey, here we lost 10 minutes for the whole plant. This whole line anyway had to be stopped. Here's the bill, right? And this way it probably kept going for years with that sort of, I'm the parent, you're the child, I just punish you, just thinking, well, if we punish them, over time with all the chargebacks, they will improve, right? This is also something we see very often in the supply chain of General Motors, Ford, and so on. They just say, well, okay, you deliver defective products, you're going to be charged. And if you do it often enough, you just will be charged so much, you might go out of business because it's really very, very expensive. So you will be very, very careful. It works sometimes, okay, but sometimes it doesn't work at all. Sometimes they just drive the business, the supplier out of business because the supplier just keeps trying to play games to avoid the blame and try to just game the system. He's not focused on the right things. Maybe the supplier doesn't know how to improve, right? So this is something we've seen actually quite often in certain supply chains. I'm guessing that was the issue with that subcontractor. And there's a line in the Wall Street Journal article that I mentioned earlier that made me laugh. I mean, only last month did Boeing start to refuse some pieces of fuselage. And it's like, okay, this is no good. Like, you fix it. Before that, they would just take anything. This is insane. This is just insane. Boeing, if this is, I'm guessing this is their sole source of fuselage for some of their models of planes, or maybe all of them, I don't know. But this should have people there in the Spirit AeroSystem plant with authority to do a wide range of things, including, okay, you stop that, you fix it, you know, you fix it now, you don't get to the next station with this, I see some problems, you know. And if you see a lot of issues, Boeing should have had dozens of people there. And of course, that can be charged back also to the supplier, right? There's a whole industry of sort of inspection companies doing containment, right? In the automotive industry is rather common. I'm just surprised this did not happen. At least the people did not have the authority to stop things. Say, no, you don't make progress until this is fixed, right? It's just, again, back to culture, back to finance guys at the top saying, I don't want to know anything. I don't care. You got to get that many planes out the door, and I don't want the cost per plane to be above that amount. And that's it. And so the guys on the shop floor never have time to actually say, okay, what's the next thing? What's the next thing? And the people in supply chain, in purchasing, don't have the time to say to the suppliers, okay, you pose and you get that right and so on. And that's how you get all these quality and safety issues. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And you know, referring back to the article again, that's that they describe how the fuselage came in, and as soon as it hit that rework or the production line, the quote was, you know, the workers saw the fault straight away. And, you know, it sort of blows my mind with respect to, why didn't you fix it straight away if you saw it straight away? But I guess they were under pressure from the upper management to get that plane down the production line as quick as possible. And if they did not have the right equipment in front of them, then how could they sort of fix the problem straight away? And, you know, I think they were just forced to actually move that product down the, and in fact, it got to the point where it is in goods outwards, parked there for some time, and clearly it just got looked over, you know, it just got forgotten. This should never happen. This should never happen on a small industry business, let alone someone like Boeing. It's just insane. You're right.
It's really insane. I mean, with consumer electronics, with whatever you want, you know, apparel, gift and premium, even the simplest products, you don't wait until the products are finished to go and look at them and say, well, okay, I'm going to fix this and this one, okay, I'm going to fix that. It's just totally insane. You put them on the side right away and you do something. Okay, these are big products and they're on the line, and you don't have like 5 or 10 different lines at the same time. So that's why let's look at the automotive industry, right? Because the cars, let's say in car assembly, in the final workshop after painting, they go down the line, okay, and if some workers see some issues, are they going to just say, well, there's an issue, whatever, let's wait until the final check or when it's on the parking lot outside to fix it? No, at least not in the world-class sort of manufacturers. I guess there's some crappy manufacturers that do that, but I don't want to ride in their cars. Okay, and if you see an issue, does that mean that you stop the entire production line for the entire factory? Of course not. Okay, and people talk a lot about Toyota and the undone cord, and people just, oh, they see a problem, boom, they pull the cord and it stops the line. That's not the case. Of course not. When they see a problem, when the worker sees a problem, he presses the undone or like pulls the cord or whatever makes sense in his workstation, right? He's got that ability to alert his management. So you have the team leader, who comes sort of running because you have a lot of special music, let's say. People can hear it. Ding, 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 ding. And people come sort of running and like, oh, what's the issue? Okay, okay. And can it be fixed within, I forgot, and probably depends from plan to plan, but let's say within 1 minute or 2 minutes, can they just fix it? Then, okay, poof, stop it and stop the music. And then it goes to the next, you know, the car just keeps running. If now there's an escalation process, if after 1-2 minutes, okay, it's still not running, then it's basically calling, I don't know, the workshop manager and some quality folks and some process engineers and so on. More people will come and look at the problem and see, okay, and try to understand what it is and what should we do with that car. Okay. And does it stop the line? Not yet, because when you look at the typical Toyota factory, from what I've seen anyway, they have a buffer of a few cars. So typical production line will go, let's say, one car a minute. That's their cycle time, right? So you have this long line, and then every minute, pop, you know, is the next car that's on this workstation. Next minute is going to be the next car. Okay. However, they have a buffer. They have a buffer of, it depends, maybe 5 cars, 7 cars, something like that. Now, if it's a pretty serious issue, are they going to keep it and like stop the entire plant, you know, for 20 minutes? I don't think so. They have ways to go around that. And in the worst case, you know, maybe the car still keeps going down the line, but then some people are working on it. They don't say, well, let's just put like a sticker on it and then we'll get back to it at the end. You know, people keep looking at the stuff and keep saying, okay, maybe it's the whatever. There's a problem with the seat. Okay, we need to get the seat back out of the car and back inside or whatever. This could be done quick if it's in the seat area because they have the installation assist and, you know, this sort of special jig to put the seats nicely. Okay, if it's not in that place, of course, it's not that nice to take the seat out and put a new seat, but they still have ways to do that. Okay, and probably 95% of the time or more, they see an issue, they fix the issue, you know, without stopping the line, right? But it seems like at Boeing, when they engineered their plane assembly lines, they didn't think about that. They didn't put this kind of buffer in place, or it could be something else, like some extra space, you know, oh, we're going to put it here so it doesn't block the line anyway. And then up, it goes back on the line, right? It seems like they did not have this kind of way of dealing with in-process issues, basically, right? So I'm rather surprised, but what I've seen is, very often people in a certain industry will say, well, that's how it's done in our industry. And I don't think there's many people from Airbus who go work at Boeing and vice versa. So they're sort of alone in their world. And maybe people at Boeing, some of them worked at Lockheed Martin, you know, or something like that, or Bombardier maybe. And then they say, well, there's the same in Bombardier. Oh yeah, it's the same in Lockheed Martin. Yeah, you know, that's it, that's the way it is. And these guys will not go and look at a good automotive factory, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Pretty typical, right?
Yeah.
So that's just, again, within their four walls. But if you have a key subcontractor, a key supplier, and they keep delivering bad stuff, if you have a collaborative spirit with your suppliers,
yeah,
what would you do?
You know, I think it comes down to, yeah, listening to what you're saying there, and it makes 100%, you know, sense on where you're coming from. But, I keep on coming back to, you know, what is best practice? What are these good suppliers doing? What are these good manufacturing plants doing? And to me, it comes back to process. You know, and if you've got a good process in place to manage issues as you see them, whether that be having buffer stock beside each of the stations, whether that means have a specialized team to come in when you hear the the ice cream van music, whatever the case may be. You know, it's all about having a process to manage each of these situations. Now, by the sounds of it, you know, going back to the Boeing issue, they clearly did not have any resources in order to manage this particular issue. Now, whether this is a first time they've seen this very, very specific issue on a fuselage that came in, I don't know. But it's clear to me that, you know, they weren't in a position to manage that fault or issue as they saw it. And Toyota, on the other hand, they have the mentality and the mindset. All of the workers know exactly what to do. If there's a problem, there's an issue coming down the line, you know, and they can manage it. Right. When it goes back to the management team, it's all about processes as well, how to manage your upstream supply chain. And, you know, you can look at the Toyota model and any of these other large manufacturing companies that have got all of the processes in place, they will have a supplier improvement program in place, for sure. For sure they will. Right. Even us, you know, when we look at our sort of small manufacturing plant here, we work very closely with our suppliers to ensure that all of our incoming goods are the best that they can do. But we don't trust the process that's coming down. We always double inspect any of the products that come in through the door, you know, goods inwards inspection. You know, that's just a given. You know, and some of the size of Boeing is skipping some steps or cutting costs to get around various different money saving or money growing, whichever way you want to look at it, to the bottom line, and that is a fatal mistake.
Right,
fatal mistake.
Right. I'd like to hear from their supplier quality engineers. You know, if they have some, I don't even know. It just blows my mind. Blows my mind. This whole approach. So we're talking about bad manufacturing habits here. Basically, what they're doing is that they're waiting until later. They don't rework the problem right there where it should be. Right, that's the first big issue. It should be detected, stopped, you know, sort of contained, and then at the source or as close as possible to the source. And then it should have feedback mechanisms to the source again, so that there's process improvements, so that these same kind of issues are much less likely to occur in the future. That's one thing. The second thing is they wait again until the final product, that the plane is completed and sort of on the parking lot in the outgoing warehouse, basically, right? In many cases, they wait like that, which is just crazy. So what does that mean to just focus on inspection and rework? For the production line leader, let's say, when we talk about the incentives for the local managers, it might make sense if the incentive system is not very nicely thought out anyway. Because I'm sure the local, the production line leaders, they will say, well, you know, I'm compensated based on the planes that go out the door, you know, to the next area of the workshop or whatever, right? And if we stop production, I'm going to have some people come down from the offices that were all red in the face and they were shouting at me. Right. So I don't stop. I just keep things running. So with the wrong incentives, that happens. And I've seen it many times when you say, oh, this is really bad. And look at that. Like every product or every second product has that defect. I mean, you got to do something right now. It's really bad. And they're like, well, you don't have the authority to stop the line. OK, who has the authority? Yeah, like we don't know. Like there's no escalation process. Oh, the production manager is not here, but even he never stopped the line before anyway. Maybe talk to the general manager. Let's see, right? This is bad. This is really bad. Okay. Why is it so bad also for the manufacturer? When you rework later, obviously, it's much more costly than getting it right the first time. Okay. That's the first problem. And if you wait until it's the final you know, the plane is completed, maybe you need to disassemble a part of the plane and put it back together. Now, when you do that, what happens to quality and reliability? They take a dive, right?
Yeah. The more a component or a subassembly or a complete product is touched and reworked, you introduce the greater risk of poor quality at the end of the product. And this is why it's important to, you know, going back to the first step that we talked about is quality right the first time. But, you know, the more reworks there are, the more issues with respect to, you know, potential failure modes down the road, not necessarily on the production line at the time of the rework itself, because, you know, that's going to be inspected, hopefully inspected and checked and passed. But what's the effect on the long-term reliability? Now, that's got a big question mark. And we've seen products that have been reworked in the past, the reliability is more often than not as good as a clean, processed, manufactured part.
Oh, yeah. There's so many examples of that.
Yeah.
And there's even an example in my mind from the aerospace industry. This is not a fresh one, from years ago, but there was an accident where, so at the back of the plane, so the plane is pressurized, and at the back of the plane, you have a big, sort of a big sphere, okay? Because it's not pressurized until the very end of the tail of the plane. That at one point they stop, they keep the pressure in, okay? And that part is extremely critical because if it's not strong enough, when the plane is high up in the air, the pressure difference will put a lot of pressure on it. If it breaks suddenly, then it will break some critical parts that are behind it, including some of the control surfaces. You know, at the end at the back of the plane, what do they call it? The spoilers and things like that. The elevators, yeah, and things like that. So there's an example where that spheric part was reworked, but not reworked properly. It was not replaced entirely. Only half of it was replaced. They did not put the right number of rivets in a smart way. So with some fatigue, at one point, boom, it broke. And the plane became totally out of control, and the pilots couldn't do anything to save it. Right, it was a terrible accident. So this is just an example. When you have something and you repair it, either when you disassemble, reassemble things around the part that you want to replace, or when you actually repair the part, where the repaired part is not as good as the first time good part. Right, and that introduces serious issues. Right, in the case of Boeing, well, it introduces safety issues.
So, picking up on what you were saying there, Bruno, it brings me round to a really important point with respect to a product's going down the line, and someone sees an issue. Let's say an issue in the component. On a subassembly or the assembly itself, depending on how it's coming down the line. And what they may end up doing is, for lack of a better term, putting a Band-Aid on the fix. In other words, they're not focused on actually finding the root cause of the problem. And this is really key. And again, there's plenty of case studies out there where this has been the case. You know, we've actually fixed the problem. But no, you haven't actually. You've just covered up the gap. But why was the gap there to start with? Well, maybe as stresses within the product itself. So casting, for example, comes in, and that's a porous casting. You know, but it's got a surface crack. So what do you do with the surface crack? You end up welding it and grinding it down, but it didn't actually fix the problem because the casting is porous and is useless to start with. You need to actually find the root cause of all of these issues. Again, this is another big topic, and we'll probably discuss that in depth previously. And but it's all about processes, understanding where your products come from, making sure that the quality is correct at the supplier before it leaves the supplier. So therefore, you're not just relying on suppliers' processes, you are involved in those as well. You are checking goods inwards. You are allowing the workers to empower themselves to stop the production line without being ridiculed or punished. And you need to get the training and the mentality right with respect to how do we handle issues as they're coming down the production line. And if you've got that mentality and training set up within the workforce, for sure, your products will end up a better place from a quality aspect.
And that's why coming back again to quality engineering and supplier quality engineering, well, this is basically what they call corrective actions, right? If you have some issues, all right, you tackle them in order of priority. You say, well, this one is a pretty serious issue, and it happened, already like two times, three times. Like, what's your corrective action plan, right? And working together with the people at the process that actually led to this issue, right? But that's a whole other topic. Maybe no need to cover it today. But we would need another half hour or another hour. But really, it's coming down to the point of cause and then the root cause or root causes, because sometimes there's more than one root cause. And you better have some separate streams of corrective actions. Okay, and then after that, you need to actually go with okay. So we put the finger on this root cause. What how to address it? Okay, so that's so sometimes pretty obvious, sometimes not. Ideally, you improve the process. You don't just give new extra instructions to people or put an extra control point, right? And then you actually follow up if they really do it. And then you follow up. Okay, does this kind of issue come back? And you make it part of the like the control plan or the work instructions and things like that. So this is again a whole topic. We could do an entire episode about that. So I think we covered this issue of poor manufacturing practices at Boeing, what they call traveled work, and a really, really bad approach to dealing with issues and doing rework too late and way too much rework and letting a key suppliers run loose for way too long, and probably are also having the wrong incentives. By the way, they changed the incentive system. Let's see. They're trying to address a root cause here. Okay. So let's see if it really changes things. So yeah, that was a good one. Thanks a lot, Paul.
Yes, thank you. I look forward to being on again soon.
All right. Thanks to the listeners. Please give us a five-star review in whatever software you use to listen to our podcast. It's always good to see that. And you will hear from us next week as usual. Thank you.
Thanks again for listening to this podcast brought to you by the Sophies Group. We're on a mission to provide you with everything you need to manufacture effectively in Asia, including inspections, auditing, new product development support, contract manufacturing, 3PL warehousing and fulfillment, and much, much more across Asia's key manufacturing areas. Visit us at sofeast.com, that's SOFEAST.com, to learn more and get help. If you've enjoyed the podcast today, please do rate, review, and share, because it will really help others discover us too.